Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
Jim Toronto with you here at WGN, 7:20 a.m., filling in for Nick DiGilio. The sound of Boy George and Pop, and the Boy George and Culture Club can only mean one thing. It's time to take a visit to the Pop Culture Club with Mick Kaler. Welcome aboard, Mick.
Good morning, pal.
How you doing? Thanks for setting your alarm. Am I your wake-up call this morning?
Actually, you were. I went to bed a little bit early, but I got the call, and I'm like, all right, I'm good to go.
Look at you. You sound very chipper.
For 3:30. I'm an early riser. I always was.
For 3:40. My goodness. So for those who who are not familiar with this segment, explain to them why I'm playing Karma Chameleon, Mick.
Well, we like to talk about pop culture events, happenings, people, trends, all those kinds of things. Pop culture. And you are playing a song by the pop band Culture Club. Hence, Pop Culture Club.
There you go. See? See how it all ties in, folks? Some people listen to this show and they say, my goodness, it sounds like a train wreck. It sounds so ragged. It sounds like there's no preparation, but it's very scripted.
Fine-tuned engine, my friend.
In fact, Mick, would you turn to page 17?
Yeah, I'm 17, paragraph 2, right?
Good. That's where we're at right now.
Got it.
Very good. Let me turn my page. All right. We're all on the same page now. Very scripted. But, for those who watch the WGN morning news every morning, if you wake up with that, you probably have heard many of Mick's parody songs that they play regularly. On that morning show, are there any recent ones that they've been playing, Mick, that people may have heard?
Last week, Robin Baumgarten celebrated her birthday, and we had a song that I actually sang on and actually did the whole vocal with my buddy Al Flash. We did the Green Day song, Good Riddance, Time of Your Life.
Right.
It was to Robin and a special day in her life, and we put a video together with it, and it got a lot of hits on YouTube. And they played it a couple times on the morning show, and Robin was laughing along with it, so it was a lot of fun. So another minor hit from Mick and Al.
Yeah, very good. And I also should mention, Mick has worked with some of the, as a producer, for some of the most successful and in many cases legendary radio personalities in this market, beginning with Larry Lujack and then Murph in the Morning. And then Ramblin' Ray and Howe, and then you had J.D. Spangler over at
US 99, and WCKG before then. So I think I had about a little over 18 years of Chicago radio experience.
And you've written a book, too, haven't you?
Yes, I have. It's going to come out in the spring. I'm going to self-publish it on Amazon, and it's called Raised on the Radio. And I'm just in the final edits of it right now. And if you want to read little excerpts from it, I do have it out on my blog. And the blog is not just mickkaler.com, MickKaler.com. And I've been putting in little excerpts from the book since August, about once a week, so you can check up on some of the stuff that'll be in the book.
So as the the pop culture world here in the last several weeks especially has been so dominated, and rightfully so, but it has been so just flooded. Every day there's a new accusation or allegation about either a celebrity whose name has already been mentioned or a new celebrity in terms of sexual harassment or sexual misconduct. And my goodness, I mean, it seems like, you know, the term has been open secret. There's been a lot of these people. I mean, obviously, it started with the movie mogul, Harvey Weinstein. But it really started to become a runaway train, people in the industry knew who Harvey Weinstein was. But when Kevin Spacey's name got thrown out there, and then in the last couple of weeks, Louis C.K., the director Brett Ratner, now Senator Al Franken, once like well-known celebrities' names started to get mentioned, then it really took off. The Harvey thing was kind of inside baseball.
Yeah, kind of an industry thing.
Yeah, and it was abhorrent behavior, and it certainly made headlines. But it wasn't until personalities that the general public knew in a more familiar way and liked and respected and enjoyed their work, then all of a sudden you saw this dark side of them. And so what I want to talk about today in the pop culture, among other things, is not so much the details, because that's all over the news. But what I'd like to discuss with you, and certainly people are welcome to chime in or text at 312-981-7200, I guess the hardest thing that I'm grappling with, and which may become part of the conversation as this continues, because it doesn't seem to be slowing down, is where do we go now in terms of these celebrities that we may like? I mean, can and I'm asking this rhetorically, but I'll ask it to you as well, but we're going to right after with this break, but I'll just throw it out there. The idea is, can we separate an artist's art from their personal behavior? Can you watch a Kevin Spacey movie anymore? Can you watch House of Cards? Can you watch Louis C.K.'s comedy specials? Jeremy Piven's name is thrown out there. He's got a show on CBS.
Dustin Hoffman, Sly Stallone.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I just saw the Sly Stallone thing now. And not only has it been these names, but the swiftness. I mean, a week and a half ago or 2 weeks ago, Kevin Spacey was one of the most in-demand popular actors in Hollywood. Louis C.K. was one of the most successful and popular stand-up comedians in the business. And within a matter of days, they have been practically banished from show business.
They're persona non grata. They
yeah.
are nowheresville.
And obviously that's been it's been elevated because of the strength and the power of social media. But wow. And every day. Now, the Sylvester Stallone thing is relatively new, isn't it?
Yeah, it just came out, I think, today.
Yeah.
And it was some allegation from 1996, some 16-year-old girl in Las Vegas. And Stallone is one of those who's coming out right away, the big word being vehemently denying all allegations of misconduct. And so we'll see where that goes. And like you said, there's been all these other ones. And people wonder, it's like, I saw it on Facebook today on my page, people are saying, okay, who's the next one?
You know,
are we going to have a pool to see who's going to be the next celebrity that gets outed for some kind of behavior? And somebody had noted the Al Franken thing earlier in the day, and I thought it was a joke till I saw the headline online. I'm like,
yeah,
oh my gosh.
And a photo.
yeah, that's the other part. It's like you got Roy Moore in Alabama with these women coming out of the woodwork saying, you know, he was cruising malls for young girls. But here's Al Franken with pictures.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Thank you, Al.
Yeah. So we will debate and just question, can moving forward, what do we do with some of the, in terms of the art? Can we still enjoy the creativity and the art of a performer and not approve of their personal behavior? That's going to be the question that we'll discuss. Jim Toronto here at WGN, 720 AM in the Pop Culture Club with Mick Kaler. We're discussing the Hollywood sexual harassment and scandals and the sexual misconducts. And now, it's not even Hollywood, because now we're getting into politics. Roy Moore, the Senate candidate from Alabama, and now a Republican adversary, Senator Al Franken, former comedian from Saturday Night Live.
Keep in mind, obviously Bill Clinton and other people.
I'm just saying the recent rash.
Yeah,
of
the
these.
Recent stuff. Yeah, the politicians are all of a sudden into the game.
So how do you feel, Mick? Just throwing some of the names out of some of the people that have been accused of this. Kevin Spacey and Dustin Hoffman, and let's go even back in time. Remember, Woody Allen got in a lot of trouble on two accounts. Not only going out with and eventually marrying his girlfriend's adopted daughter.
Yes, but then it wasn't a stepdaughter for him, but it's such a very funky situation.
Yeah, and then being accused of molesting his adopted daughter with Mia Farrow, Dylan. But then, he was a pariah for a while, but Woody Allen continues to attract some of the best actors and actresses in Hollywood to star in his movies. And a few years ago, he even won an Oscar for his screenplay for Midnight in Paris. So he's been forgiven. Mel Gibson, who, made a lot of, anti-Semitic remarks, he was nominated for an Oscar a couple of years ago. He's in a family movie right now, a holiday movie. What is it, Big Daddy or something? What's the
Daddy? Something. Two Daddies or Daddies?
Yeah,
something. It's a sequel to one of the ones before, Daddy's Home.
And let's not forget, dating back to the '70s, Roman Polanski still can't come into this country.
Yeah, he's still banned
because of allegedly, drugging a teenager. And he won an Oscar. So where do we go? I mean, can you personally separate the art from the public or the private behavior of a celebrity? Can you still watch Kevin Spacey, for instance?
I can, because I've always appreciated Kevin Spacey's talent, Louis C.K.'s comedy. I've always enjoyed and found, the insights that he's had. But the one difference between, the Spacey situation, Louis C.K., and the instances you're talking about before, Jim, is, first of all, like you said, there's modern social media. The whole world knows everything that goes on the second it happens or the second the allegation comes out. But also, just what you said, okay, Mel Gibson had that rant with that police officer when he was drunk, okay? Woody Allen had two incidents from a long time ago that were unsubstantiated. Louis C.K. allegedly, or actually he admitted to being so obscene and disgusting in front of multiple women on many occasions. Also, Kevin Spacey, I guess there's a list of like 20 different accusers from his work in the theater in London, let alone what was going on back here.
You know what's interesting? The Kevin Spacey thing is interesting. Several years ago, it was reported. It didn't get a lot of play, but this was a red flag to me. I don't remember the story, but there was a story when he was in London, because he was the artistic director at the Old Vic Theatre for several years. So he was in London, living in London for quite a few years. And there was a story that came out that his cell phone, he was like mugged at 3 a.m. in the morning in Hyde Park, which is like the central park of London, at like 3 a.m. and he lost his cell phone. And I'm sitting there going, okay, wait a minute. This sounds fishy.
Of course it was.
Why is Kevin Spacey in Hyde Park at 3 a.m.?
Unless he's looking for something.
And how is it? And he said a young guy stole his phone. What was happening? What was going on where, A, he was at the park at that time, and B, he was without his cell phone suddenly? So I was wondering, this sounds a little fishy, but the story came and went. It was before Twitter and before the real, charge of social media, the real impact of it. And so I was not surprised when I heard this. And apparently, it sounds like it was one of these, like they said, an open secret that he did have this behavior. I'm with you. I love Woody Allen. I think he's one of the great comic minds of all time. And while I certainly didn't approve of the allegations, and I don't know what was true or false, but I still watch Woody Allen movies, and I still enjoy them, and I still can watch. I can separate. I know some people cannot, and they just say, I hate that person now, and I can't watch it. I certainly can understand that, and I empathize with that. But I just look at it. I mean, I've been reading a biography of Leonardo da Vinci, and, you know, for his time, you know, he was kind of a dandy. And he lived with a young boy for many years.
Not a protege?
Well, yes, he was a protege in many ways.
In some ways.
Yeah, and so you can argue, what was Leonardo doing with this young boy? But does that mean that I can't appreciate the Mona Lisa or the Last Supper? So I have, maybe in my mind, I've tried to rationalize it, but I think that the talent is one thing, and while I don't agree with the personal behavior, to me it doesn't diminish what they do creatively or what their talent is. So I am able to do it, but I know some people aren't.
Right. And again, it's no judgment either way, and some people say, how can you do that? But getting back to Kevin Spacey, like I said, these multiple accounts, and then some, I guess there's this allegation that this underage kid, that was the first allegation that came out, a young actor that he knew years ago on Broadway. So it wasn't just multiple cases, but again, the minute you get into that underage thing,
all right, no, I mean,
there are charges like that of something so untoward.
Yeah, this is not just, you know, this is not just bad behavior. This is seriously illegal behavior.
Yeah, it's criminal. I mean, and they all can be viewed in criminal ways, but of course, any time you talk about someone who's underage, whether it's a boy being, you know, accosted or a girl, obviously everybody gets their back up, and I do too, because I think that's a terrible thing to do. And you're right. You know, some people can separate the artistic thing. Some people can't. But here's the other issue, Jim. Where do their careers go? And to put it in perspective, Kevin Spacey had already filmed his parts for a new movie coming out, All the Money in the World.
Yeah.
It's ready to go in theaters. It's going in theaters next month. They have pulled him from the movie, and Christopher Plummer has taken over the role. And this is supposedly one of these possible Oscar-contending movies. That's how serious people are taking this, because they know, hey, if we put this movie out with Kevin Spacey in it, forget it. Nobody's going to go see it, because they're going to say, I'm not watching a guy who, you know, does these things with young boys and is, you know, obscene in his behavior with these allegations.
Yeah. Well, we're going to be right back after this, and we will go to the news, and then we will then continue to talk in the Pop Culture Club. But right now, quick break, no switching. Jim Toronto with you here at WGN, 720 AM, filling in for Nick DiGilio. Be here till 5 AM. And we pass the torch to the opening bell, and then Steve Cochran takes you through the morning. And then we've got Bill and Wendy and John Williams and Ro Khan and Justin Kaufman and Patty Vasquez. And then we're back to 2 a.m. again. Although I will not be here. Then that would probably be David Plyer, right?
Matt Bubala.
I'm sorry. I got my day screwed up again. So that would be, because that's Friday into Saturday. And Dave's on on Sunday morning, but it's kind of Saturday.
Correct.
Exactly. On the phone right now is Mick Kaler as we continue our visit into the Pop Culture Club. Mick is a gold card member of the Pop Culture Club.
That's right, charter member.
Charter member. So one quick thing I also wanted to mention. So we were talking, just to close up the conversation about this, you know, sexual harassment things, and if can you like a celebrity's work, even if you may not agree, or if they are, you know, convicted of a crime. The one thing that's been very interesting here is everybody's forgetting Bill Cosby.
Right, it's almost been forgotten about.
Yeah.
And again, there's somebody who had multiple, you know, was it like 50, 60 different women that have come out and said, this stuff happened to me years ago with Cosby and his ass.
And what I find interesting, and once again, I don't know what is behind it, if it's just there's a shift in the pop culture zeitgeist. But if you remember, when Bill Cosby was initially accused of this, and this is another one of these things, it was a very open secret in the comedy world that Bill Cosby did this, but it was never really put out into the mainstream, and it wasn't really aggressively you know, pushed and investigated until a few years ago. But if you remember, a lot of celebrities came to Bill Cosby's defense.
Right. Right. Said, oh, I work with them or I've known them all.
Yeah, even though all the women who came forward had very similar stories of the modus operandi, there were still, and there was actually a racial component because a lot of African-American performers came out in support of Bill Cosby, and they basically said, well, this is a character assassination because he's a wealthy and successful black man, and that whole kind of aspect entered into it. And what I find interesting is it's only been a year or two since that broke, and look at the difference. There is nobody standing up for Kevin Spacey or any of these people. There has been swift justice in the public.
Plenty of rebukes.
And like you were saying, their careers within a day or two are completely gone. Kevin Spacey physically taken out of a movie, edited out with a new actor. Louis C.K. all ties to the FX. You know, Netflix, HBO, any name removed from shows, salaries gone, completely banished within days.
Yeah. Well, the first thing I thought of with all these guys is, you know, your careers are, you know, if they're not over, they're certainly going to be on hold for quite some time. And I'm thinking, I hope you saved your money.
Okay? Yeah. Well, I don't think they're worried about money, but my gosh, in terms of continuing a career, I mean, they're still relatively young, many of these people, and
sure.
And they could be without a career, and who knows, once again, what they could have done artistically. Once again, not condoning what they've done, but it is amazing the difference in the way socially these things have happened. Like I said, the Bill Cosby thing wasn't like this runaway train, which we've seen over the last couple of weeks. So it really, timing is a lot of this, and I think it's also a major factor is how well liked you are.
Right, how well you're thought of.
You know, the Dustin Hoffman thing seemed to go away very quickly. The Kevin Spacey thing has stuck around. The Louis C.K. thing has stuck around. It's very interesting within, and I don't mean popularity with the people, I mean popularity within the Hollywood world.
Yeah, and again, with Kevin Spacey, the gay community was very upset that he came out at that same time and said, yes, I have gay relationships, because, you know, he was linking that out as, hey, this is my opportunity to say, well, I'm gay also.
So even for years when he would not come out and stayed in the closet, even though it was
an open secret
that he was gay. So, yeah, there's a lot of a very complex issue. But as I said, I still think that at least at the time being, I can separate the art from the private life, but it is not easy.
Right. One other point I wanted to bring up about Louis C.K. I think out of all these guys that have been accused of these things so far, I think he has the most possibility of eventually bouncing back. Not because he's a comedian or he's talked about some of this stuff in his act or whatever. He has been the first one to really just straight come out and say, "Hey, I did all these things. It was wrong." He had a big, long statement. He could have criticized and been harder on himself than he was, but he was very upfront, as opposed to Kevin Spacey or Harvey Weinstein, who have taken cover and shelter in a sex rehab clinic, which some psychologists will tell you there's really no such thing as this. It's some way to make money.
Right.
And they're just kind of in hiding right now.
Yeah.
People may say, oh, well, he has an addiction. That's why he did this.
Well, I'm sure that this story is certainly not going to go away. It's only going to – I think we're only going to see more and more names. But as I said, the bigger question is, as more of these names come out and more high-profile, well-liked, successful celebrities are involved, the question does become – as just a fan, you know, how do you think? What do you do? Because you like this person, and yet you go, oh, my gosh, but who knew they had this dark side and who knew they were doing that? So that's where to be continued is all you can say on that. I wanted to talk about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, because there are currently 19 nominees up, and the public can vote until December 5th.
Right.
And so after this quick break, we will discuss some of those nominees, play a few songs from them and discuss who we think might be getting the nod when the final inductees are announced. Jim Tarano filling in for Nick DiGilio here this morning. I've enjoyed my last two or three days. As I said, today's the hat trick. I'm ready to throw my hat in about another half hour, 40 minutes. I'll throw my hat in and say we got a hat trick. So enjoyed the last 3 days here. Hope you have, too, if you've joined me for all three nights. On the phone right now is Mick Kaler. We're talking pop culture in our pop culture club, and I want to discuss some of the nominees for the class of 2018.
Now, how many do they actually choose? Is it based on percentages, or how does this work?
I think the voters are supposed to pick at least five or six.
Okay.
So I think that's what they, I don't think there's a hard, fast rule. But I think it's usually about five or six that they choose. They have 19 nominees. And for the last couple of years, it was up until the last few years, it had always been decided by a committee of industry people that were selected by the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame board. But to get a little more public interest, they opened it up. And so now you can go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame website, and you can vote for, I think, up to five of the nominees, and that will be weighted in. But whoever wins the public vote doesn't automatically get in.
Okay.
It's just kind of weighted into the discussion by the committee. The committee still decides, but wanted to go over some of the names. It's a very interesting and kind of diverse list. We've got bands like Radiohead and Depeche Mode, and then you've got Bon Jovi and the Zombies. So you've got like 80s, 90s, 60s. You've got someone from the 30s and 40s, Sister Rosetta Tharpe, a African-American lead guitarist and blues singer.
And you also have Link Wray.
Link Wray from the 50s.
Yeah.
As I said before, some very well-known bands like the Moody Blues, Dire Straits, Eurythmics, the Cars. So interesting, LL Cool J, so the rap world once again being represented, as well as Rage Against the Machine, a more recent band as well. You have to have 25 years since your first song.
That's why people like Radiohead or groups like Radiohead, right, Rage Against the Machine are now in, or as far as nominees go.
Well, let's take a listen to some of this. Why don't we start with Radiohead Dan, and play a little Radiohead, and we'll chat about them. It's Paranoid Android by Radiohead. Tom York, obviously the driving force behind that band. They certainly are one of the more popular 90s bands. You talk to anybody who's 35 or 40 years old, and they love Radiohead. But I'm wondering, are they a first ballot inductee, do you think?
Well, obviously big favorites with the Lollapalooza crowds, too, but I don't see that. That's just me. But I know some of their songs, too, but I just don't see them as first ballot Hall of Famers.
It'll be interesting because, I think, I tend to think that they may get in. They really are, once again, you got to remember that at the end of the day, the Hall of Fame is very subjective, and they want certain kinds of bands.
And Radiohead does fit that groove. They're kind of a darling of...
They're electronic, and they're rock, and they're dark, and they're moody, and, Tom York is this kind of enigma, dark and, angst-filled. So that usually fits the bill.
Yeah. Tortured artist.
Yeah, the tortured artist. Now, here's one that I'm rooting for, which is pianist and singer and... Just one of the most soulful voices, as well as a very politically active voice, and certainly a leader of the feminist movement in the 60s and 70s, Nina Simone. And she does a great version of Here Comes the Sun, the Beatles song. And given the popularity now and the female empowerment wave that's going through, I wouldn't be surprised if Nina Simone gets in.
Yeah, that's a possibility. Also, for that respect, the Eurythmics could get in too with Annie Lennox.
Yeah, Annie Lennox is certainly one of the best singers of the last 25 years. Can we play Eurythmics? Can you go to that one there, Dan? I just love Annie Lennox. I think she's got an amazing voice. Eurythmics were very instrumental in kind of combining. They were definitely a synthesizer band of the 80s, but as they continued their sound with Dave Stewart, the other half of Eurythmics, really infused a lot of bluesy soul and rock into that kind of initial synthesizer sound, and Annie Lennox persona with the orange hair.
And they pretty much owned the mid-'80s to the early 90s.
Yeah, she was. I always thought she was really sexy, too.
Yeah, they own the airwaves.
Yeah, I always wanted to dive into her ocean.
Well, that's up to you.
Was it raining with her?
Yeah.
Now, here's one of, I think, both of our favorite, one of our favorite bands. I think it's sad that they are been almost forgotten. I don't hear their music on the radio. I don't hear anybody playing them. But I think one of the best bands in the last 25 years is Dire Straits.
Sure.
And Mark Knopfler, his guitar, when you hear Mark Knopfler's guitar, you know it's Dire Straits and you know it's
very
Mark.
Very distinctive, right.
And you know it's Mark Knopfler. And can we play a little of that? That's from their 1980 album, Making Movies, which is just a tremendous album. And it's, like I said, you know, they were so big then in 1985 with Money for Nothing and the Brothers in Arms album. But I don't know why Mark Knopfler will not put that band back together and tour and let that catalog be resurrected again.
I think he just puts it in his rearview mirror because he's done a lot of other work, singing with Emmylou Harris and other people and doing a lot of collaboration stuff without doing it with Dire Straits.
I mean, that music, their music was so complex and yet so melodic and interesting, and Knopfler's voice, the whole thing, it's just a musician's band. If you love music, there was so much going on in Dire Straits, not just Sultans of Swing, but some of their later albums, like Love Over Gold and, as I said, Making Movies, and obviously the Brothers in Arms album, even Communique from, I think it was 82 or 83, or no, 78 or 79. But I certainly hope they get in, because I just love Dire Straits. They're one of my favorites. But we'll take a quick break. At the other side of the news, we will continue our discussion here, and we'll make some predictions. I'll list all of the nominees, and we'll decide who we think should get in. But right now, we'll take a quick break. No switching. Jim Toronto here at WGN, 720 AM. Filling in for Nick DiGilio. Be here till 5 AM. On my phone is pop culture guru Mick Kaler. And we're talking about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominations. The inductees are usually announced sometime by late December, early January, and the actual induction ceremony is usually held in April. I believe this year actually going to be held at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame site in Cleveland many times.
Okay, supposed to do it in New York. Okay.
Yeah, it's always been in New York. I've seen two of them back in the early 90s when it was at a smaller gathering at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel, which was very cool. Last several years, they've been doing it at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn.
Make it bigger so more fans.
Yeah, a lot more fans can go. But when I saw them at the Waldorf, I was in the press room, but I snuck in on the main floor. It's just like a banquet hall, except it's like going to a wedding, except every table has a rock star at it.
Yeah, there's no bad table.
Oh my God. I walked around and, excuse me. Oh, hello, Chuck Berry.
Hello, Tom Petty.
Yeah, I mean, no kidding. I bumped into Chuck Berry. And one year, the coolest thing was, I'm there and Bruce Springsteen was being inducted. I went to Bruce Springsteen's induction, I believe, in 98 and Elton John's in 1994. And so while Bruce and the E Street Band are performing on the stage, I once again snuck out of the press room because you only watch it on TV, and I wanted to see it live. So I snuck out of the press room and onto the floor, and I'm looking for a place to sort of stand or sit to look inconspicuous. And as I'm walking through these banquet hall tables, that's what it is. It's just, you know, especially it was in the banquet hall of the Waldorf Astoria Hotel, like you would be at a wedding. I see this empty table right near the front. So I sort of just, everybody's standing during the performance. So I just sort of go by this table and I'm standing there and I stay there for their, they play like three or four songs. And, you know, I'm having a ball, I'm singing along and everything. And then when they're done, the reason that table was empty, it was Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band table.
Oops.
So here I'm standing there, and all of a sudden, you know, Miami Steve Van Zandt comes, and Roy Bittan, and Nils Lofgren, and Clarence, and in fact, this Roy Bittan's wife, when he comes back to the table, she goes, "Boy, this guy knew all the words."
He's a fan, Roy.
Yeah.
You beat him.
Now let's get him out of here because he's scary.
Well, I was going to say that, you know, when you started to bite into their chicken kiosk.
Yeah, I shouldn't have had the apple cobbler.
Yeah, Patty Scalpa, could you pass me those rolls, please?
Well, yeah, well, you know, the bread pudding was, you know, with the ice cream was melting. I mean, I hate to let a good bread pudding a la mode go to waste.
Can the busboy scare us up some more water over here, please?
Yeah, I mean, my God, but I was like sitting there going, why is this table empty? Because it's the best table in the house. And then I realized, because the people sitting at it are on the stage.
Yeah, and Bruce is getting inducted.
Yeah. But we were talking about the inductions. I got a text asking how are the actual nominees decided. And the way they are decided is that there is a committee of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, like the board, and they decide the nominees. And then they open, when they decide the nominees, then they open that up to their bigger membership. And as I said, also now there is an online component for the fans. And that all gets weighed in, but it's still not voted on in terms of whoever the fans want gets in automatically, but it certainly can't hurt.
Right. There's an influence, but again, as you said, it's subjective. And my thought is, as I'm looking over these nominees, Jim, I think they like to go diverse. They like to have, okay, we got a hard rocker, we got somebody super popular, we got somebody from way back in the past. And that's why, you know, first of all, a Radiohead could definitely get in this time, you know, in their first ballot. As you mentioned, a Nina Simone. Judas Priest could get in. They could be like, hey, we got to get a heavy metal rocker in there.
Yeah, let me read them off, and then we can decide who we might think maybe the four or five or six that get in there. So there's Radiohead, Nina Simone, the Moody Blues, Kate Bush, Dire Straits, Eurythmics, Jay Giles Band, Bon Jovi, Depeche Mode, The Cars, Rufus, featuring Chaka Khan, The Zombies, Sister Rosetta Tharpe, Judas Priest, Link Ray, Rage Against the Machine, LL Cool J, The Meters, who are a funk band from like the 60s and 70s, and MC5, which are kind of the punk innovators of that list. And one of their band members was actually Fred Sonic Smith, who was married to Patti Smith.
Right.
And he passed away at like age 45. There's a song that she's got on one of her albums called Frederick, and that was named after him. So out of those, who would you say? Real quick, Dan, could you play the song by Link Ray called Rumble?
Rumble is a classic.
Yeah, this is a song. People might say, who the heck is Link Ray? But
yeah.
Whoops, that's Dire Straits. That would be Sultans of Swing. Could you find Rumble? There we go. Oh, you know what? I'm playing that. I'm sorry. Not your mistake, totally mine. So now this is a classic.
And some people recognize that music from being used in Pulp Fiction.
Right. But this is a in terms of influence. I mean, this is the rock and roll guitar.
Often people say that that was the first heavy metal song.
Yeah, so I wouldn't be surprised in terms of innovators and pioneers if Link Wray gets in there.
Yeah.
And also, Dan, can you play this one? Because I'll tell you, I never heard of Sister Rosetta Tharpe, but I looked her up on YouTube, and I was convinced that she belongs in there. She was an African-American blues guitarist, which in the 30s and 40s, what did that even mean?
Sure.
And yet...
tell you the natural facts that a man don't understand that good book right, and that's all.
That's her playing.
Religion now, I tell you that's all. Now when you see people jump.
So I wouldn't be surprised if she might get in too.
Mm-hmm.
But more recent ones, as you were saying about diversity. Rage Against the Machine is very politically active. Tom Morello is very well respected in the rock world and in that Rock and Roll Hall of Fame world.
And another critic's darling.
Critic's darling. I would not be surprised. It could be a long shot, but I would not be surprised if Rage Against the Machine gets in as well, because it's a little more current. They don't want to, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame wants to appeal to a wide a variety of fans. They don't want to make it sound like it's just some, wax museum filled with dinosaurs.
Of old nostalgia acts.
Yeah. So if you had to pick four or five out of that list, who would you pick?
I would vote for as opposed to who's going to get in.
Yeah. Who would you vote for?
First of all, Dire Straits have to be there. I would go with Radiohead just because, again, I think there's a lot of influence there. I would put in a Link Wray. And I think Eurythmics should go in for sure.
Wow. The Eurythmics, I think, belong. I'm wondering if just in this crowd, if they might get overlooked. Because I'm going to look at it from a political, I'm going to try to predict.
Okay.
And I'm going to say that I think Radiohead's going to get in. I think Nina Simone is going to get in. I think Dire Straits is going to get in. I'm going to go and say the Cars.
They were big, too.
They were
86, 87?
And very, very influential. Their first album is basically a greatest hits album, and they were really the first American new wave band to really hit it big. So I wouldn't be surprised. I agree with your Link Wray. And once again, from a pioneering standpoint as well, because there's a lot of female empowerment in the air right now, I wouldn't be surprised if Sister Rosetta Tharpe gets in there, even though, very few people know her. But in terms of a... of a Hall of Fame having, innovators, and people that really kind of unheralded. She certainly fits that bill. As I said, go on YouTube, watch her play the guitar. I'm sure the fact that it was the 40s, that she was a woman and she was African-American, it probably hurt her being more successful. But I'll put her guitar playing, I'm not lying, right up against Chuck Berry's. Go online and watch this woman.
Absolutely.
It's really impressive. So LL Cool J could also be a long shot. He's very popular. The rap world, I still don't understand that. I mean, if there's ever a hip-hop or rap Hall of Fame, will the Who be in it?
Or the Beatles or the Stones?
Yeah, I think there needs to be a rap Hall of Fame.
Yeah, there should be. But again, it's an encroachment of something that you weren't on the rock charts. You weren't in the rock and roll world, just like... Satisfaction or Won't Get Fooled Again wasn't in the rap world.
Joe Namath is not in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Yeah, he's a football player.
Yeah, so. I mean, there's a Hall of Fame for football. There's a Hall of Fame. They need to either change the name and call it the Music Hall of Fame.
Or pop music.
Or pop music, because, it's not just rap. Madonna doesn't belong in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
No.
She belongs certainly in a Hall of Fame. I'm not denying that, her impact and her influence. But I don't know about a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Thinking about it a couple years, how will Justin Timberlake not get elected? And yet he's not rock and roll.
Yeah, and it won't be long before NSYNC will be going on. Back
exactly. But they're not rock and roll. They're popular, and they've got huge followings of people.
No, they'll still get in as far as at least be nominated.
I think they have to change the name Because if not, it's just, it's not fair to bands who are rock and roll. I mean, here, the Moody Blues are still waiting to get in.
Yeah, well, and on a quick note, I wanted to mention, and you and I have talked about this before, about groups that aren't in. Okay, I'm going to give you a quick list. Ready for Love, Feel Like Making Love, Silver, Blue, and Gold.
Bad Company.
Shooting Star, Good Love and Gone Bad, Moving On, Rock and Roll Fantasy, and Bad Company. How is Bad Company not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
And they're not even nominated this year.
Yeah, and I keep telling people their lead singer, Paul Rogers, he sang in Free, the song All Right,
right
Now.
Right.
He sang in Bad Company all those years. He still does with them. He was the lead singer of The Firm, and he also toured with Queen after Freddie Mercury died. How is he not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for all that?
I know. There's a lot of questions and iniquities. Who knows? But we'll see. I'm sure, like I said, the nominees are nominated or usually announced at the end of the year or the beginning of the year, and then the inductees are put in April. One quick trivia question before I let you go, Mick.
All right.
Today is November 17th, right?
Yeah.
What is prominent about that date? 11/17.
Give me some kind of a hint.
11/17.
Oh, Elton John live album.
Right.
Yeah.
The Elton John, his first live album was a radio broadcast when he first came to America, and it was recorded on November 17th, 1970, and that was the name of the album because it was a radio broadcast on that date.
Wasn't it actually called 1711, though?
Well, that's in Britain because they do it backwards.
Yeah, they do the day of the day of the month before the month.
Yeah, but here in the United States, it's 11/17/70.
Yeah.
Very good, sir. Thank you, Mick. Always fun. If you want to see any of Mick's work, his parody songs, they are played frequently on WGN Morning News on Channel 9.
We got a new one in the works, by the way, because Pat Tomasulo is going to be doing a Saturday night show, a weekly show starting in January. We've got something in the works to pay tribute to that funny guy.
Very good. Thank you for joining me, Mick Kaler.
You bet, pal.
Thanks for waking up.